TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Protecting the rights of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. After 4 days of intense deliberations between WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange's legal team and attorneys representing the United States government, at the end of February 2020, the British judge suspended the extradition hearings until mid-May. The Trump administration decided to charge Julian Assange under the Espionage Act for his role in publishing classified documents exposing U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. Assange could be sentenced to up to 175 years in prison. In contrast, the Obama administration had decided not to charge under the Espionage Act in order to protect media such as the New York Times. They published the very same materials that Assange had made public. Assange has been held in London's high-security Belmarsh prison since April 2019, when he was removed from the Ecuadorian embassy by British police. Assange was a resident of the embassy for 7 years after entering it in June 2012 to claim diplomatic asylum. He was wanted by Swedish authorities for questioning over sexual offenses, charges that now appear to have been fabricated. Assange was willing to testify and come to Sweden if he was promised not to be extradited to the United States, an assurance he never received. In this program by TUC Radio, we look at the alternative media responses from Going Underground to Democracy Now! With a report from UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, Nils Meltzer. Also on Going Underground, Seven Dagdalen, a member of the German Bundestag, and Amy Goodman talks to Assange's attorney, Jennifer Robinson. Here first is UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, Nils Meltzer, interviewed by Afshin Ratansi on Going Underground.
Special Rapporteur, welcome back to Going Underground. Before we get to issues around the court case, we were hearing from people from the Labour Party, pretty mainstream, now coming on board to support Julian Assange. Is what you have been saying since your report into the alleged persecution of Julian Assange becoming more mainstream now?
I think that's a fair assessment, yes. I'm actually surprised to see, compared to last June, which is about a month after my visit, when I tried to place an op-ed on the International Day in support of the victims of torture in the mainstream press around the world. I was unable to place an op-ed demasking the torture of Julian Assange after having visited and examined him with medical experts. I contacted the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Australian mainstream media, the British mainstream media. It was impossible to place it. Today, what we're seeing is really that the mainstream press starts to realize through publications in alternative media that they probably got it wrong. And so they get more interested in discovering the truth about the story.
Less face-saving and more, they know that if Assange is convicted, the next people could be them.
Well, we do have indicators of that, and perhaps they start to, as we say, smell the coffee after the raids on the ABC headquarters in Australia and after Glenn Greenwald was arrested in Brazil and is being accused, you know, according to the same kind of playbook that we see playing out with Assange, or also public funds being cut from mainstream broadcasters. Perhaps they start realizing that they really did first come for Assange, then for Greenwald, and now they may be coming for the BBC.
Okay, but Boris Johnson is on the record for saying it is only right that Julian Assange finally faces justice. That was when he was dragged out of the Ecuadorian embassy and thrown into jail here.
I think we all agree it would be about time for him to face justice. It's just what he's facing here in Britain is not justice, and what he would be facing in the US is not justice.
Well, Johnson went on to say it was a credit to Foreign Office officials who worked tirelessly to secure this outcome, meaning the dragging of him, the pictures of which were caught by Ruptly, the news agency. I mean, are you saying every one of those Foreign Office officials is facilitating what could amount to torture and arbitrary detention?
You see, Julian Assange has been expelled from the embassy based on a decision made by the president, perhaps even with the support of the parliament in Ecuador, but it was communicated to him on the morning that he had been, you know, deprived of his asylum status and deprived of his citizenship, because the Ecuadorian constitution does not allow the extradition and expulsion of nationals without any due process. And the British police just went in and dragged him out.
Well, so what do you make of the now Prime Minister Boris Johnson saying credit to foreign officials for that?
Well, he's crediting for that because he likes the outcome, but it certainly has nothing to do with the rule of law.
Well, Amnesty International, they've refused to make him a prisoner of conscience. Why do you think there are still other NGOs who refuse to take on board the Julian Assange?
Well, I very much support Amnesty International when they try to protect people by declaring them prisoners of conscience. But when they use their worldwide influence to exclude individuals from that category, I think then it becomes very problematic, especially when we're talking about a journalist who has been exposing grave violations of human rights and who is prosecuted precisely because he has exposed violations of human rights.
And this is political. I mean, in your view, you don't think that a whistleblower exposed alleged crimes, say, in the Russian government, who had found asylum here, there would be no chance of extraditing them to Moscow?
Well, that's the first issue, is the one of the whistleblower. Let's say Snowden, who is now in Russia, or if you'd have an equivalent, you know, let's say a Russian whistleblower who has asylum in the West. And there are people like that. But Julian Assange is not a whistleblower. He did not leak information.
It was just leaked. The publisher.
He was leaked to him.
Okay. You don't think this anymore has anything to do with what you call fabricated rape allegations? In fact, you believe those allegations could be linked to the Afghan war logs, revelations of Anglo-American NATO troops in Afghanistan.
Yes, well, I'm not in a position to, you know, confirm or deny whether there has been some kind of a sexual offense at some point between the women and Julian Assange. All I can say, I've seen the original Swedish police documents where the women are not claiming to have been raped, but you can see even the woman sitting in the police station sending a text message to a friend saying, I don't want to accuse Assange of anything. I just want him to take an HIV test, but the police wants to get their hands on him. So, I mean, who would write a message like that? Not a raped woman. Then we see a consecutive series of grave violations of due process in the Swedish case. And all of this happens within a month of the publication of the Afghan leaks. So where the U.S. has asked their allies to initiate prosecutions against Assange wherever possible. So, you know, the choreography of this, how it plays out, and how Sweden actually at no stage in the proceedings really tries to protect the women's interests, refuses to question Assange when he is still in Sweden and offers and actually demands to be questioned. But the day he leaves Sweden and he receives written permission by the prosecutor to leave Sweden, they issue an arrest warrant against him for trying to evade justice. So there is a series of contradictions that is clear.
Which was acted upon by the now supposedly leading candidate to take over from Jeremy Corbyn in this country, the then Director of Public Prosecutions, Keir Starmer.
Yeah, I'm not aware of who exactly acted at the time, but clearly that plot then played out to push Assange into a corner where everybody had this image of him, and I was influenced by this image as well in the beginning, this narrative of him being a suspected rapist, being a hacker, being a narcissist, being a spy. And as soon as you scratch the surface a bit of this case, you realize there is nothing to back it up.
Okay, you also discovered a trail that led to Swedish Justice Minister Thomas Bodström, the former Justice Minister, who you claim effectively supervised a kind of rendition torture, perhaps documented by WikiLeaks, of the kind documented by WikiLeaks.
Well, he was the justice minister when Sweden and the security police of Sweden kidnapped two people, registered asylum seekers in Stockholm, and handed them over to CIA without any due process, and they were immediately ill-treated on the airport territory and then flown to Egypt, where they were tortured and detained arbitrarily. Of these two people, we know because they survived. Both of them filed complaints with the United Nations, and Sweden was obliged to pay them, I think, each of them about $500,000 in compensation.
So you think that the guilt, when the rape allegation was used to smear Assange, it was an admission of guilt on the part of Sweden when it dropped all the allegations?
Well, I would say...
Or dropped the suit against him?
Well, they admitted that they never had any evidence that was sufficient to even press charges against him. 5 days later, the leading prosecutor of Stockholm closed the case saying, I believe these women, but nothing they said indicates a crime. There could be an explanation, but then I asked Sweden formally in a formal letter, as I'm mandated to do by the United Nations, I submitted all the contradictory evidence to them and said, please make sense of this. Explain to me how this complies with human rights law before I draw my conclusions. And now the first response of Sweden was, you're criticizing the judiciary, which is independent from us, and we are the government, so we can't comment on this. I wrote back to them and I said, please, you know, you're my counterpart, but please transmit my concerns to the judiciary and let them answer to me. On which then they responded in a one-page letter saying, we have no further observations. My experience is where states don't want to respond to my questions, they're probably they have something to hide.
Okay, well, as the court case gets underway here in London in two parts, another part in May, Chelsea Manning, who was let out early by President Obama, a source for WikiLeaks, has been virtually bankrupted, so they say, by the United States for refusing to testify against Julian Assange. So UK authorities here, are they basically deciding on whether a show trial should go ahead?
Absolutely, because there's not going to be nothing else than a show trial in the US. There's no chance he's going to get a fair trial. It's not just about Julian Assange. This really is a battle over press freedom, over the rule of law, over the future, I would say even of democracy, because democracy, which means that the people control governmental power, this cannot exist with secrecy. Yeah? You deprive the public of their right to know, and you deprive them of the tools to control the government.
Well, you know that we have a supposedly independent judiciary here. Having said that, the new Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, newly elected Prime Minister, has previously expressed reservations about the conduct of the Iraq war and wars after 9/11. Can you even call on Boris Johnson to do anything in the case of Julian Assange?
The Home Secretary of the previous government signed the extradition request and granted it.
Sajid Javid.
Exactly. And that was now challenged at the court, and that's why it's with the court. If it had not been challenged, he'd just be extradited.
Although that tends to be just a formality when it's the United States, one of Britain's closest international partners.
Well, I think, to be fair, there have been individuals that have not been extradited to the United States by Britain, which I believe is one reason why they wanted to go through Sweden, because Sweden has a track record of extraditing just about anybody to the United States with or without due process. Now, that is obviously off the table with the case being closed in Sweden, and now they just go through the British system.
Special Rapporteur, thank you.
Thank you.
That was UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, Nils Melzer, interviewed by Afshin Vatansi on Going Underground on February 24, 2020. On March 2, 2020, Afshin Vatansi interviewed Sevim Dagdalan, a member of the German House of Representatives, the Bundestag. Here's his introduction.
What was it actually like to sit in a London court last week watching an alleged travesty of justice as arbitrarily detained and tortured WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange fought for his freedom? One international observer was the deputy leader of the left party in the German Bundestag, Sevim Dagdalan, who, along with 32 other MPs from 12 different EU countries, witnessed arguably the most important trial of the century so far. Thanks so much for coming to our studio in London rather than in Berlin. Even before the trial, doctors were saying he may die at any moment. What was it like in court?
Terrible in many ways. I'm really appalled about the situation and the conditions, even for us international observers. I've seen so many trials worldwide, And I'm really outrageous about the conditions for us international observers. We always have to queue there and wait for hours just to make sure that we can really go and follow the case in the courtroom and not in a media annex room where you cannot listen, where you cannot hear something from the courtroom. And in another way, it's terrible too, because to see how the conditions are which Julian is facing. I mean, he is a really gentle, human journalist who haven't had done a crime, and he's treated like a top terrorist behind bulletproof glasses in the back of the court, which is just because of him, and he cannot follow the court. And he cannot hear the court even, just hardly he can hear and listen what's going on. And I think these conditions are not adequate for a state which is saying the rule of law is totally accepted here.
Well, he did commit a crime, a minor bail violation, and the person who is about to perhaps lead the new Labour Party after Jeremy Corbyn said he has absolute trust and faith. He took time out in this court process that you were at.
I would invite him to be in the court with us, with parliamentarians from different countries of the European Union. It's not just me as a German member of the parliament with some other Germans. We are from Ireland, we are from Italy, we are from Spain, we are from Portugal, from France, and some other countries. I would really be happy to have British colleagues from the British Parliament here. I was wondering, where are they? Because it's such a case, you have international attention and interest. And it's not just us parliamentarians who are observing this case. It's the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, the Human Rights Commissioner of the Council of Europe.
The magistrate, Vanessa Baretza, she's an impartial woman presiding over the court proceedings, isn't she?
Well, it was very weird what happened last week. When we came together to the court and she just asked in the afternoon Julian if he can concentrate on the trial and on the proceedings. And because it's in the dock and he cannot very well hear what's going on, because we had this problems from the beginning. On Monday to the 24th, the trial started, and we had this, observers had the problem to follow sometimes, because sometimes they don't speak into the microphone. Sometimes you cannot hear the judge at all because she doesn't spoke to the microphone. Or even she started the proceedings while Julian was not in the courtroom. I mean, he's a defendant. You have to wait till he is coming in to the courtroom. But then they started just the proceedings. And that means this is disrespect about this court and the trial at all. And then she asked him in the afternoon if he felt good and his well-being and can concentrate. But Julian wanted to speak up, and she didn't allow it. She said he has to speak to his lawyers, and then the lawyers will tell the court. But the problem was then Julian said, what's the point of asking me if I can concentrate if I not at all can participate in this courtroom? And she said, well, you are a participant like any other defendant. And then he said, well, I am as much a participant of my own trial as I am a participant in the Wimbledon, because he's in the dock, he is behind. He cannot have confidential communication with his lawyers. There are everywhere cameras, there are spies, there are microphones. He cannot communicate privately. He says the other side, the U.S., the prosecution, has 100 times more hours to communicate, because in the back of the prosecutor, there are representatives of the State Department of the U.S., and they are representative of the U.S. Embassy. They can communicate, they can exchange immediately while the proceeding is going on. But Julian cannot do this. And even the prosecutor was okay to say we are neutral, we are not against that Julian Assange can sit next to his lawyers to communicate with them, but the judge refuses, and this was really bizarre.
Some said that the prosecutors representing the American government, the United States government, yes, they became worried that a mistrial could happen because she appeared to be unfair. She also said, Vanessa Baretza, she could do nothing about the fact that after day one in court, Assange was handcuffed 11 times, stripped naked twice, and all his defense papers were taken away from him.
Yes, and he had to change 5 cells within this night.
You see, the European Union has said nothing about this case. Do you expect that because they don't want to intervene in nations, although they arguably intervene in Catalonia, mm-hmm, they intervene in France by allowing...
Normally, I have to say, of course, it's good if governments and the European Union, the Commission, is not intervening into the internal affairs of other countries, of sovereign countries. That's a good thing, actually. But then we have to be fair and don't do it in other cases as well.
But in this case, it's the Council of Europe, the United Nations.
Yes, and the thing is now, but it's not an intervention into the internal affairs of a sovereign country if you say we have concern about these attacks on press freedom by the Trump administration because of the Espionage Act he is prosecuted. And we are concerned about the fair trial here, if the rule of law is now respected here. That's not an intervention in the internal affairs. And that's what the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe did, and the majority, a vast majority, said Julian Assange has to be released from prison now, and he must not be extradited to the US. And it's the same with an appeal in Germany where 10 former federal ministers of Liberal Party, Social Democrats or Green, they all said he has to be released.
Sevim Daglin, thank you.
That was Sevim Daglin, a member of the German Bundestag, interviewed by Afshin Ratansi on his 3 times a week program on RT, Going Underground. Finally, on March 2nd, 2020, Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! Spoke to Jennifer Robinson, Julian Assange's attorney. Here are excerpts of their conversation.
Jen Robinson, welcome back to Democracy Now! Thanks for joining us from London. Can you describe the 4 days of hearings, just physically, and what Julian Assange faces?
We've just had a week of hearings. Julian Assange faces 175 years in prison for publications back in 2010 that were released to WikiLeaks by Chelsea Manning. And I think it's important to remember what this case is really about and the publications for which he's being prosecuted and sought for extradition. That includes Iraq war logs, the Afghan war diaries showing civilian casualties and abuse of detainees in Iraq and Afghanistan, war crimes, human rights abuse, the same with Cablegate, war crimes, human rights abuse, corruption the world over. So for 4 days last week, there was a packed out courtroom filled with, the public gallery was packed, the journalist section was packed, to finally hear, after 10 years of the US preparing this case against WikiLeaks, a grand jury investigation that was opened under the Obama administration and an indictment pursued now by the Trump administration, we finally heard that the US case, and of course we heard nothing new, since Chelsea Manning prosecution back in 2012. What is important, though, is that what the court finally heard is the defense case. And a number of arguments were put forward by our team, including that the Espionage Act, this is an unprecedented use of the Espionage Act against a publisher, which is, of course, a political offense. Under the terms of the US-UK extradition treaty, there should be extradition should be barred on that basis. We also heard evidence about the grave threat that this poses to press freedom, not just for journalists inside the United States, but for journalists everywhere around the world, because of the precedent this case sets, that the United States could seek to extradite and prosecute journalists and publishers from around the world for publishing truthful information about the United States. We also heard evidence about how the United States indictment has misrepresented the facts, including making the false allegation that Julian Assange had recklessly and deliberately put lives at risk. And we heard evidence in the court this week about the technological security measures that WikiLeaks imposed upon their media partners and the redaction processes that were undertaken to protect anyone at risk in those publications. It was a long week of hearings, and I think it's important that people start to see the true facts of this. Of course, Chelsea Manning remains in prison in the United States right now, but we heard evidence from her prosecution in these proceedings demonstrating that Chelsea Manning had in fact provided this information to WikiLeaks based on her own conscience, having seen war crimes, the murder of civilians, the murder of journalists by United States forces, which is what drove her to release the material to WikiLeaks. So it was a long week of hearings, an important one for Julian.
He said Wednesday, "I am as much a participant in these proceedings as I am watching Wimbledon." Again, complaining that he could not communicate with you, with the lawyers overall. Now, the U.S. attorneys argued that his case is not political.
Of course, this case is inherently political. Whether you look at the terms, the offences for which he's been charged, including numerous offences under the Espionage Act, which encapsulate and capture traditional journalistic activities. The Espionage Act itself as an offence is a political offence in substance. But we also need to look at the political context in which this prosecution and extradition request comes. This is, of course, in the context of the Trump administration, a president who calls the media the enemy of the people. We've learnt since Julian was arrested and this extradition request and superseding indictment came through that the Obama administration had taken a decision not to prosecute under the Espionage Act because of what the so-called New York Times problem. That is that you cannot distinguish between the actions of WikiLeaks and the New York Times in receiving and publishing this information. We also say that beyond the political nature of the offence and the political context in which he would be charged, the U.S. prosecution tried to argue this past week, that what WikiLeaks did and Julian did in publishing this information was not a political act. And of course, we heard evidence in the court about Julian's very well-known political views that we heard with respect to WikiLeaks and the aims and why WikiLeaks was created by him. We heard with respect to the Iraq war logs, WikiLeaks, Julian saying with the release, if lies can start a war, then the truth can stop them. And we heard evidence about how the publication of evidence of war crimes in the context of the Iraq war, both with respect to, for example, collateral murder, which was evidence of a war crime and U.S. troops killing journalists and civilians, but also more broadly about torture of detainees, how evidence of that in fact led to the Iraqi government withdrawing the immunity for U.S. troops and the ultimate withdrawal of American forces from Iraq. So, of course, what we're seeing is that WikiLeaks not only published information of important human rights abuse, it was certainly in the public interest and for which they've won journalism awards the world over, but that in fact resulted in a change in U.S. policy, and we say that that makes it a political offence.
That was Jennifer Robinson, Julian Assange's attorney, interviewed by Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! On March 2nd, 2020. My thanks go out to Democracy Now! And Going Underground for their coverage of a case of extraordinary miscarriage of justice and their courage to break through the silence of the mainstream media. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.